or 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware. I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. The following episode was recorded on March 31st, 2019, and produced by me at my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, Sarah and Nate join me to talk about public libraries and what an ideal vision for the role of libraries in our society would be. That's all coming up on Arsenal for Democracy. Episodes are available for download on Tuesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes or Stitcher. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it simultaneously from WVUD.org on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. This is Arsenal for Democracy. You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me in studio again this week is Nate. Hey, Nate.
Hey, Bill.
And joining me on the line from Idaho is Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
This week, we're going to be talking about libraries, and it's great that we have a co-host who is a library worker to come on and talk about this. So this is something that there's been, I feel like, quite a bit of capital D discourse happening about libraries, especially in left circles and on social media and so forth in recent weeks and on various podcasts. And, you know, it's something that we talk about periodically. There was a number of interesting articles in the past, you know, year or so that have come out. So it just seemed like a great topic to go into some more depth about. So a few sort of touch points here before we get, you know, really into this. One thing was that I had seen an article from one of the local newspapers in Massachusetts, the Patriot Ledger, talking about the town of Scituate, that their town library was expanding from the services. You know, obviously, a lot of libraries have already expanded beyond books a long time ago to various audio media, and then they started adding like video streaming and stuff like that. But they said in this article from earlier in March of this year, starting on Sunday, anyone over the age of 18 with a valid library card can borrow items from their library of things for 2 weeks at a time, just like a book. Many of these items are related to crafting, like a yarn winder, or outdoor activities like camping chairs, or they mentioned tents as well in the articles. But there are also items like a turntable, a pair of ukuleles, and a telescope that was donated by the South Shore Astronomical Society. And so they list off these various things, but this concept is this library of things where you can, like, you know, oh, I don't go camping very often, but, you know, I'll go get the camping tent for a couple weeks out of the library or something, you know, and sort of an interesting thing. And so that was something that, you know, I kind of put this on my radar. But also there was this sort of viral tweet. It got on the actual tweet itself, got 49,000 retweets. But then there was also lots of like people talking about it with quote tweets and stuff like that. This was this account, Aaron Rose Glass. I don't know if there's a joke in there or if that's her actual name. But anyway, the original tweet was, "What if public libraries were open late every night and we could engage in public life there instead of having to choose between drinking at the bar and domestic isolation?" And this was posted at the end of toward the end of February of 2019. And this sort of kicked off this like huge sort of Twitter discussion about this. A lot of people, I think, being maybe overly critical or jumping to conclusions, which is a fairly common thing on Twitter. And she later did a follow up thread where she was offering what she called a few clarifications here for those interested, particularly to public librarians whose work, expertise, and struggle I deeply respect. And she talks about as many point out, public librarians are overworked, underpaid, precarious, and she cites some various other similar jobs where that's true. And then she says, but this situation is neither natural nor inevitable. For example, users produce enormous wealth for tech companies whose unpaid taxes could support public libraries, schools, health services, and other social infrastructure necessary for a flourishing democratic society. The role of the public library today is obviously a complicated question that intersects with a broad range of social issues and requires, above all, input from the amazing librarians and staff that work in them, but also the renewed interest from citizens who might help support them. And she said that her tweet was inspired while reading the great radical librarian Sanford Berman's essay, Libraries to the People, and another book that she mentions there. And then she says, you know, that she apologized to anybody that misunderstood the spirit of the initial tweet. But, you know, there were certainly people that agreed with her, and kind of some of the original points that I think she was making was sort of about the social alienation and isolation under capitalism, and that just having like publicly owned spaces where people could have more sense of community might be good. And certainly, you know, I think a lot of us are familiar with university libraries that tend to have later hours than a lot of public libraries. So it's not totally like unprecedented to consider this. But, you know, there were some people who were kind of upset about this, sort of saying, well, they're already underfunded, or, you know, would librarians have to work really late and other staff, you know, would this create security issues, et cetera. And again, I think the discussion that we should be having is sort of a more idealized level discussion, which is not constrained by like all of the situation that we have today and the limited resources that we have today. It's like, should we be making a case for a broader vision and then figure out how we get the resources for that? Sarah, I'll go to you first. Where do you want to start on this discussion?
I wanted to just circle back to the idea of libraries being more than just for books. You know, my home library, Boise Public Library, they have Wi-Fi hotspots to check out energy efficiency kits, so you can see if you're bleeding power and what you can do about it. And robots, you know, mostly targeted for kids, for in the sort of STEM/STEAM, hey, kids should learn to code sort of thing, in a fun and delightful way that's accessible. So yeah, we've got a lot of stuff that is more than just books, not available to check out. We have programs for 3D printing and things like that. And so it's just really interesting. Maybe if you haven't set foot in a library for a while, it would be worth your while to see what your hometown library has to offer. Make sure you have a card and support your local libraries. And that, I think, dovetails into the idea of what role does a library have in a community. I think that people look at the whole thing about libraries being open later. You did mention academic libraries. Yeah, my college library, I think, was open until 11 or midnight most nights, you know, for all the kids studying. And it was almost surreal to be in a library late at night, just because it was in novel experience for me.
Was it spooky?
We didn't have a creepy library. We just had a sad 70s library.
We need additional funding to fight ghosts.
Oh, yes, yes. That is one of my platforms here. Yeah, gotta fight the ghosts. But yeah, it's just being in a library at night would just be the same as open hours during the day, just more of them. So yes, that would be a funding thing. That would be a staffing thing. But you're always going to have night owls and early birds. And so I don't think it would be that big of a deal to find staff who wants to work those hours. And especially if they're a librarian who's really into programming, for by which I mean not programming in the computer sense, but creating library programs for adults. There's always a need for that sort of thing if your library has good spaces for it. And so, yeah, I see that a lot of people aren't aware of what modern librarianship looks like. It's very, I mean, I don't think that's an industry that people get into the minutia of, but libraries are really attempting to be flexible and work with the changes that have happened. Even just in the past decade, there's been a lot of changes and developments in libraries. So bringing this conversation out to the general public is good, but it also highlights what people don't know about working in a library or experiencing the library as an employee.
Nate?
Yeah, I feel like the services offered by libraries have definitely expanded, especially since you don't even have to go there now. You can just like download an app and start downloading audiobooks or things like that. And it's quite handy. And
e-books.
Yeah, exactly. E-books or anything like that. I think, Sarah, you also mentioned about there were various like STEM gadgets and things that were offered for targeted towards children. And I think the Scituate library is looking to add things like this. There's an Ozo bot that has kids learn to write their own codes by creating patterns and programming the robot. That might be similar to what you mentioned in Boise. And then there's the Makey Makey Kit, which teaches kids how to use codes and electrical circuit to make simple keyboards or game controllers. Then there's like a die cutter machine type thing. And I remember also even going all the way back to like watching stuff about libraries on like Sesame Street as a child. And I remember they would like make the point. It's like, yeah, you can actually borrow art from the library. You can, it's not just, because obviously like Sesame Street, they're actually pushing that, you know, I mean, it's not propaganda, but it is like they're sort of trying to acculturate the children to having an idea about libraries. Like, oh, this is actually a place where the public can come together and, you know, as we're talking about, and engage in discourse. And yeah, it's Sesame Street, but they are trying to impart some life lessons there. So I don't know. That's just something that stuck with me. So,
Nate, you read through a number of articles that have come out relatively recently and listened to some other podcasts talking about this. What is sort of the discourse on that front surrounding libraries?
Well, yeah, I mean, there is sort of like some talk around the idea like, oh, libraries equal socialism or something like, or like we should have Amazon replace the libraries, because I think there was a op-ed in Forbes a couple or a year or so back about, you know, let's get rid of all the libraries with Amazon, because, and there was a satirical article back from like 2011 making this point. It's like, oh, libraries are not driven by market forces or whatever, therefore they're, this was tongue-in-cheek, but saying that, oh, libraries are socialism, or abolish the libraries, or...
Well, I think one of the points that gets thrown around a lot now is that if someone proposed the concept of a public library now, you know, similar to if they proposed the concept of public education now, right, and if it didn't, in a world where it didn't exist, people would be like, no, that's, you can't do that, it should be left to the market.
Yeah, well, there was the article basically said that it seems like people like libraries a lot, and so therefore there is an opportunity for Amazon to enhance shareholder value remains. So yeah, that's, it seems to only care about getting a new business opportunity than advancing the public interest or anything like that. So yeah, I mean, obviously it's not exactly the same, but basically this article in Current Affairs is talking about sort of overall making the point, it's, yeah, you know, you're creating a situation where you have a public space, you don't have to pay money immediately to get in, sort of comparing it to like a extremely urbanized area like New York City or places in Japan where you have to pay, you have to sit down at a cafe or something like that, or use the bathroom. And so that's sort of just part of the general thing. And also going back to the Twitter thread, there were people talking about how Starbucks has basically taken over everywhere. And, you know, there's challenges for that situation existing, or how Amazon has basically gotten rid of all of the big box bookstores like your Barnes & Noble, your Borders, things like that. New England Mobile Book Fair moved rather. But so because people, you know, would go on dates there, they would hang out there and just chat or whatever. And now that's no longer as nearly as possible because everything just gets delivered with Amazon.
Yeah, or everything, you know, if they're still around, like in the case of New England Mobile Book Fair and some of the Barnes & Noble's locations, right, they, if they didn't go bankrupt or close, they get downsized to the point where it's not really anything close to a social space. And losing those social spaces, I don't know. I mean, I, you know, there were definitely, especially when I first moved back to Massachusetts from Delaware after college, I certainly felt like very frustrated, you know, and I understand that, you know, the budget constraints and the staffing constraints and stuff like that, and that there's a relative sort of peak demand and lower demand. But like, as a young person, I felt very frustrated, especially on like Friday evenings when the library would close pretty early, you know, and in general, there would be a lot of times where I'd be like, I'd like to go to the library at like 8 or 9, you know, and stay there until, I don't know, 11 or something. And that wasn't an option really, you know, and occasionally you'll see, I mean, this is also sort of true with academic libraries, but like, you know, oh, this is like finals week, so we're like opening the library for, you know, for later hours so that like the high schoolers can study for their exams and stuff like that, just like we, you know, see the college students get to do that on college libraries. But that's sort of the exception to the rule. And it would be interesting to consider, you know, I mean, again, we're talking an idealized world where the budget is not really a constraint. Like, yeah, let's get like overtime pay or something for night shifts, you know, for library workers, staff, the librarians, whoever, you know, get some folks in there. And of course, you know, get some funding for fighting ghosts and T-Rexes that come alive at night if you are alone in the library. That's an important security concern. But yeah, so it just, it is interesting to contemplate this idea of like, well, you know, we've got this great public social space to some degree. Can we do more with that? Can we expand that? Can we have this non-privatized space where people could gather and socialize and interact? And, you know, they're always, you know, you're always hearing these Silicon Valley people talking about like how they came up with these great ideas because they bumped into someone in a, you know, shared workspace or something, and during the coffee break or whatever, and they came up with this idea, and it's so much innovation, and we should do more of those. And it's like, I mean, imagine what, you know, do that at the library. Like, you don't need to have a privatized highfalutin workspace thing. Sarah, further comments from you?
I just want to point out that they're already, I think from a lot of people talking like this, clearly not Erin Glass here, because I think she is a librarian, but a lot of community interaction and community building already happens at the library. You're probably just not going to library programs or visiting all that often, which is fine. I mean, we're here when you need us kind of thing. But there are conversation corners for English language learners. There's other programs for new Americans kind of thing.
Yeah, they have that here too.
Yeah, Boise is a resettlement community here in Idaho, and so we do have a large number of refugees coming here, and so we make sure we have stuff for them, and also in other libraries across the country. And there's, you know, there's all these sort of things where people meet on a regular basis, but you probably just aren't aware of it. You know, tomorrow we're going to have a meditation Monday at a lunch hour, so if anyone... You know, like that's the sort of thing where you can just drop in the middle of your workday if that's your lunch hour at noon, and you could have a time to just breathe with other people, which when I put it that way sounds awful, but a meditation, a slowdown moment, it just sounds really neat. And there's probably stuff like that that you wouldn't think would happen at the library that happens all the time and constantly, and you're probably just not taking advantage of what you currently have. And that's the push, like, okay, libraries are doing all this great stuff, please learn more about it and participate, and then we know that that interest is there, and we can offer more in this style. You know, it's, we see programming as crucial for bringing people into the library and making sure that they enjoy all that we have to offer. And you know, there's things that when I first was a library assistant, I learned about all these resources that we have that I never knew about. I'm like, does everyone know about this but me? But no, I think it's just a problem. There's a problem with advertising what we have to offer and that sort of thing. So it really is, unfortunately, up to citizens themselves to find out what your library has, and they welcome suggestions if you're like, oh, I think the library and the community would benefit from this. You know, they'll take that to heart and take that suggestion and see if they can implement it. That's the whole thing. Libraries are there for their communities. And if I may just kind of dovetail a little bit into, there was a recent book, as in the last decade, not like brand new, Eric Kleinenberg's Palaces for the People. And he brought up the interesting point about in this, Andrew Carnegie, you know, funded a lot of libraries across the country because he felt it was important to have these palaces for the people where they could, and it's like the citizens university or something like that. There's a phrase like that. And it's how people who are motivated to learn have these resources for which they can learn from, you know, that they can visit and learn at, and then they just use that for, you know, whether it's personal gain or professional gain or community gain, everyone kind of benefits from that sort of thing. So he kind of pointed out how today's wealthy don't really have the same drive for philanthropy that Andrew Carnegie did, which is an interesting thought because, you know, we all know that Jeff Bezos is not going to give money to libraries. He doesn't do anything on a public scale for the public side. You know, he's all about his private.
Well, libraries are directly conflicting with his business model.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it's hard. And then I don't see a lot of other names, you know, Bill Gates and other well-known philanthropists. They're kind of the 20th century. You're not seeing a lot of 21st century billionaires, the up-and-comers, doing that sort of reinvestment in community. So I think that, I mean, it's, we can't rely on private philanthropy to drive these sort of innovations or anything. Not that we ever really should have, probably in the case of libraries, but, you know, we're grateful to Carnegie and what he did for public libraries. But it's hard to imagine any that sort of thing happening today.
Right. Yeah. Well, it feels like they're like accidentally reinventing the bus a lot of the time, or like maybe eventually they'll reinvent the library. It's like, all right, what if you can just like go and go to this like big giant building in the middle of your city, and there was like all these books, and you didn't have to pay for them. You just had like this like little swipe or an app you could just get scanned, and then that's free books right there. And it's like people would like that, or maybe you can get stuff at the cafe or whatever. I mean, it does seem like this would be something they would try to like reinvent without like figuring out that like, oh yeah, libraries already exist or whatever.
Like,
but
B and then a U with two dots over it, and then a K, and that would be the name of the app.
Book.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, to come back down to earth a little bit, I guess, yeah, some of the, you know, people kind of commenting in that viral tweet, like underneath that, were kind of like, well, you know, it's, you know, the resources are stretched really badly, and we do have to like lobby for more of these resources. But I guess part of the point we're making is a lot of this stuff is very popular with the public. And the better, as with many public services, the better it gets and the more services that are offered that are relevant to people's lives, the more public support will build. I mean, I think that's something we see with a lot of public transportation stuff too. If the service on public transit is really bad and unreliable, then everyone says it's useless and they don't want to use it. And then it doesn't have enough public support to get the funding for, you know, expanding it or whatever. And that becomes a sort of, circle that can be a problem. But, you know, I think with these libraries, right, it seems like there's a lot of public support in general, but I mean, it's certainly, you know, I guess there's going to have to be a lot of sort of consolidation of trends that have happened in a lot of places over the past 20 or 30 years, because that's when a lot of these libraries started branching out from some of their really core functions before then. I know that the library, there used to be a lot of branch libraries around in Newton here where we record, and then they built, around the time that I was born, they finally, after much public controversy, built the main library, and eventually the branch libraries got closed sort of as a result of that, which was also controversial. But the main library has become this sort of beloved sort of center and hub and a vital part of community and civic life here. And then interestingly, some of the branch libraries have been revived as sort of publicly like community run, like nonprofit type operations with, you know, all volunteers and stuff like that, which
I know people that volunteer at those.
Yeah. And I think it gets kind of to this other point too, which is like, yeah, there's some question of resources and getting more money for staff and things like that. If we were to really sort of expand the mandate and focus of libraries and expand the hours and things like that. But at the same time, you also have a lot of people who are really willing to, like, you know, volunteer on these things. Obviously, it's better to be paying folks or whatever. But the to some degree, if you build these community spaces, I think there's also a kind of a civic investment that people feel in it, where they're willing to kind of put in their time and resources, or maybe even donate money, you know, to these services if they feel like they're sort of part of it, right? Sarah, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thought. I mean, we do have, and I know this is common, we have the Friends of the Library, and they are usually not they are public facing in that they have the Friends of the Library bookstore. So we take donated items, and then anything that's fit for resale gets sold in the bookstore, and they also do online trades for if something more rare or valuable comes in, those get assessed and then can be sold for more than just a quarter at the bookstore. And then they do book sales 3 times a year, that sort of thing. And they're great. They do help us with funding. The 3D printing program is because of the Friends of the Library. So there are people who do want to come in and donate their time and money and effort for libraries. And so, yeah, maybe if you're so skeptical about Aaron's idea, just try getting involved with your local library and see what is already going on, because I can guarantee there's tons of stuff that you probably don't know about that your friend's organization is doing. And so, yeah, get in on that and see if you can help out your community.
Yeah, well, I mean, to that last point there about not even knowing what's already going on, like, I just took a survey from the library here in Newton. They emailed a survey, and it was basically a list of, like, do you know we have this service? Do you know we have this service? And certainly there were a whole bunch that I did know about, but there were some where I was like, no, I had no idea. That's super cool. I'm going to maybe try to check that out next time. Nate, your sort of closing thoughts?
Yeah, to build off of that, I mean, it seems like there's all these examples that I'm seeing of libraries implementing these programs maybe on a limited basis, and people overall just maybe don't know enough about it, or they're maybe not engaged, but they're, you know, people mentioning things like various like art exhibitions, drama things, you know, all sorts of different stuff. And there was also mention of libraries that are open basically on a 24/7 basis, where, you know, maybe the you can get like a pass from the librarian and they'll just let you lock up after yourself or whatever, and it's not like, it's not even a big deal. It's just, you know, some people stay there late and the librarians know that person or whatever. And so I think these things can be implemented, but, you know, as we talk about it, oftentimes it is a matter of funding, and you have all of the sort of the librarians in the comments of this, or, well, you know, we don't have enough funding, and you're going to have to ask for a tax raise and all of that stuff. So, you know, there are all these problems, but this is more about a vision of what a library could be. And as, you know, people coming together and, you know, There's so many options. You know, you could have a library be everything, anything and everything. You have a gym in the library, you could have food in the library, everything.
Yeah,
so.
And as with many of the things we talk about, at some point you have to broaden your horizons and not just keep looking down at the ground and being like, oh, we can't do anything, there's no resources, blah, blah, blah. Like, you have to set an objective and get public buy-in and say, this is what we want to do with this. This is our vision for a better world in our little corner of the world. And then you have to go do that. You know, you can't start from that standpoint of like, well, we can't do this. We just can't
do
this.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to mention that the library is often also a huge hub of the community for especially young people, for older people, and also the homeless, who are oftentimes, this is their only option if it's, say, cold outside and they need to get a roof over their head, you know, even for just a short period. And so you have in the comments, too, people saying, oh, it's going to draw all the homeless. And it's like, well, everything is connected here. You can't just... or we're to build this massive library, but then there's still a giant problem where people are homeless and they don't have enough money to get in housing. And so you can't just say, we're going to solve one part of this and then not.
Right. You have to also be, this has to be part of this broadest possible vision of a better world. That's not just libraries. All right. Sarah, thanks for being on this week to talk about this issue.
Thanks for inviting me.
Nate, thanks for being here as well.
Thanks.
That's all the time we have this week. Tweet us your comments at AFD Radio or email AFDradio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from arsenalfordemocracy.com on Tuesdays. You can hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Tuesday at noon Eastern. Our theme music was composed for us by Stuntbird. If there are articles or papers discussed in an episode, we usually post links to them on arsenalfordemocracy.com along with each episode. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message.